Peter Jackson, why?
You sold it better than I did, yes.
Hey, Ted, how's it going tonight?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Doing awesome. Looking forward to another awesome action-packed show.
Definitely. Looks like you've retreated into the house.
Yeah, the recording studio, aka my garage, is a little bit chilly tonight. Probably like, I don't know, low 40s, I figured. I'm coming into the house. I don't care if everybody's sleeping. Yeah, this looks like we have a pretty good show tonight.
Awesome.
You know, so but before we get into it, what's been going on with you?
Not much. Doing a lot of homework with the kids, finishing up, packing up the kids' teachers' presents.
Aha, that time of year.
So we got all that going, yeah.
Yeah, last week, show came out on the 20th, about 5 days before Christmas. This one's coming out on, what, the 27th? 2 days after Christmas and the end of Hanukkah and all that. Just wanted to wish everybody a happy New Year and happy holidays. Sorry we missed that last week.
Definitely.
And speaking of which, I know we're speaking into the future, but we just bought our Christmas Day Star Wars tickets.
All right, there it is.
Yeah, and with that, I became nostalgic. So I was looking at the late 1970s, early 80s era space Legos with my boys and, you know, thinking about, you know, the past and how I used to like that, especially, oh, I don't know, that would have been the time when I got those. That would have been about the time of Empire, so pretty exciting. So, yeah, speaking of Star Wars and sci-fi future, Mortal Engines is on the chopping block for tonight. Yeah, it said the official release, but what I recall, what it looked like was a teaser release.
It was definitely a teaser.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was great packaging for the trailer either, so.
Yeah, not sure what to think of this one. It's like steampunk on steroids.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the trailer. There wasn't a lot going on. I think this kind of falls into one of the things that I've been talking to you a lot about and other people about when I talk about trailers. It's really more of a lift, more of like a scene within the movie that they've taken and just played out as a trailer. It has very little dialogue, which is sometimes okay. But it doesn't really move. It isn't true to showing the all-encompassing action and interaction of what I hope is a much better movie than this teaser trailer. And, you know, I think if, like you said, if they had packaged it as a teaser, even if they called it a lift, I think it would have served better. I don't remember Hugo Weaving. I think we have one main character that is masked for most of the time.
Right. She was looking through the eye piece that was kind of, like I said, steampunkish.
Yeah, I mean it's all steampunk. I mean the only cuts in it are the cuts where they do the pre-roll of the trailer before they do, you know, the right. Studios that put it together.
And that was, you know, when we look at the trailers that we've already done,
yeah,
even if it's Paddington 2 or whatever, I mean lots and lots of jump cuts. Regardless of where they are within the trailer, they're jumping all over the place, giving you a taste of what's to be expected when you go see the film.
Definitely.
With this one, just the one scene that rolls out.
Rolls, yep.
I don't know what to make of this one. It's just, I definitely need to see more of it to know whether or not, you know, I'm even committed to watching it on Blu-ray or something.
The girl, she seems interesting. She seems like a good heroine for the story. But to see her eyes, to not see her interact with anyone, and then to just have this suburb, this little town eaten up by London with no Hugo Weaving, not much going on there. So I just, you know, if you're going to do a lift that has something that can move people.
So define what you mean by lift for the audience.
Okay.
And in this case, I'm part of your audience. I don't know what that means either.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways you can make cut downs and different pieces of marketing for long form movies in this case. So a lot of times when there's music or a big scene or a sneak peek, then you want like a lift. You want like a piece of the movie that makes sense in and of itself and is kind of self-contained, but it doesn't necessarily speak to how the whole movie's going to play out.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. A trailer needs to like take a little bit here and take a little bit there. And that's part of the reason you feel like it's really jump cutty when you see a really good trailer and the trailer is like clipping along at this seemingly faster pace than the movie, because
I'll say it's a high pace, right?
Yeah. So this has the pace of a regular movie. And the only thing I can think is maybe that Peter Jackson has like a little bit more of a say and he might want to keep this more mysterious. There's a lot of lore, as obviously as I talk to more people about how they watch trailers. I have run into a subset of people that don't watch any trailers for anything.
Really?
And they kind of stay away, and it's a
they go to movies blind. Is that what they do, or
they try to go to movies blind, and especially when they really like a movie, they don't. They think that trailers have spoilers, and I guess you know some do, but they want to go in pure. They want to go in to see Last Jedi without having seen a single frame of anything or heard a single thing of anything. So that's a small subset, but I get what those people are doing, and I think maybe filmmakers like Peter Jackson, maybe he's playing into that with this, with the leaving the mystery of who the girl is and what Hugo Weaving looks like and things like that. But I don't know. It doesn't move me to want to see this movie.
Yeah. Who is the audience for this movie?
Who is the audience for the movie? And is this trailer speaking to that audience? I think, yeah, you have it with your steampunk. You have it with a kind of a goth look. A dystopic future.
Yeah, and I also thought it's kind of a metaphor to millennials.
How's that?
Because millennials are kind of leaving behind the suburbs to move back into like an urban landscape, urban environments. And in a sense, this movie kind of screams like gentrification at its worst.
Yes, this is high octane gentrification.
Yeah, I mean, like literally high octane. I mean, I don't know how they're paying for the gas for this thing, but or diesel or I don't know. But you know, the thing about it, though, is when we look at gentrification, you're kind of consuming what was there. You're changing the landscape and the environment, the urban environment. And, you know, some people might argue it makes it better. Some people argue it takes away from the poor, whatever it might be. But the thing about this one, it seems as though they're gentrifying this little suburb and consuming it into London. And the one thing about movies is they all too often address the time period they're made in, and they talk about the politics of the day and what's in the forefront of people's minds and things of the time in which they're shown. And maybe that is part of it.
Maybe it is part of it, but I don't think this trailer serves that. I don't look too deep that deeply into this telling of this scene from this movie.
And I may be thinking of the greater movie, not necessarily the trailer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because it gives you so little to go off of, you have to like try to figure out, try to connect the dots. But I choose not to. I think Peter Jackson, Hugo Weaving, interesting to me, both of those things. I like Peter Jackson's movies. I like Hugo Weaving as an actor, but I don't see him. There's nothing cinematic in this that screams Peter Jackson either, other than his name
right
emblazoned on a card. So I'm sorry, we talked about The Shape of Water last week, and I did hear a great interview with Guillermo del Toro, for that, the director for that movie, and he talked about making that movie and talked about the poster and the trailer, and he had Final Cut on everything that came out, all the marketing and everything. And he made that movie for very little money in his case, because he had just come off Pacific Rim at $200 million budget, I think. And he made that movie, Shape of Water, immediately after that for under $20 million. So for him, it was like nothing. For a younger filmmaker, it would be amazing, you know, huge blockbuster, $20 million. But he made that movie for pennies on the dollar for what he was used to. And he got Final Cut, and maybe this is a place where Peter Jackson has Final Cut, and this is what he wanted to put out. And he didn't want a traditional trailer, and he didn't want like a trailer company cutting together his stuff. Or maybe it's too soon and they don't have enough of the CGI finished. And this is the scene that they have finished.
Yeah, it looks like a heavily CGI'd movie.
Yeah.
The final thought I had about it, though, is, you know, with this particular scene that they're showing, the bigger city of London engulfing what appears to be a suburb, I guess, and they're rolling through kind of the countryside. It's kind of like a cliffhanger. We're going to have this big city capture this little town, engulf it, consume it, and then we're going to keep you in suspense for either the next trailer, probably for the next trailer, so you want to see more, and then ultimately the movie to get you coming to the theater, because it's just all about the suspense of what in the world happens to this little vehicle that, for all intents and purpose, is huge in and of itself.
Gets eaten. I mean, I guess I'm interested in seeing another trailer for this. I'm interested in seeing trailer two.
Yeah, I want to see where it goes.
I'm interested in seeing how Hugo Weaving is portrayed or dressed up or what he looks like in this movie, considering he has very different looks throughout all of his performances.
So as it stands, I'm probably not going to see it in the theater as it is right now. How about yourself?
No, not going to see it. looking forward to more trailers because I, you know, I'm a fan, but we'll see. We'll see where it takes it.
All right.
But right now, no.
All right, Ted, so you're not going to see it. I'm not going to see it.
Right.
So that leaves one question. What is your three-word review for Mortal Engines?
So Mortal Engines gets Peter Jackson. Why?
So I guess his name is two words, and yeah, that makes sense.
Peter Jackson and why?
Sure. Just,
and the why's all caps, because I'm kind of really upset at him a little
yeah.
for this outing. Oh, and I guess, sorry, last thought, as you know, as Universal comes across and you think of dystopic future movies, I just have to mention Waterworld. And I think Waterworld got such a bad rap when it came out. I love that movie. I'm a big fan, and I am unapologetic about being a big fan of Waterworld and, you know, Kevin Costner and that portrayal of that movie. And this feels like the yin to that yang, because it's like deserts and all of that.
Right.
So I think Universal did something great with that, and we'll see if they can pull this one off.
All right. So Peter Jackson, why?
you sold it better than I did. Yes.
So with that said, how about we move on to the crazy circus of The Greatest Showman?
Awesome. So yes. So The Greatest Showman, there's a couple things with that. We'll discuss the trailer. You'll have to let me know which trailer.
Well, I was thinking more the live commercial during the live Christmas Story. I thought that was kind of a cool juxtaposition.
Yeah, so A Christmas Story. They did a live show, a live performance of A Christmas Story. And during the live performance of A Christmas Story, they did a number, a dance song and dance number from The Greatest Showman with all the main cast. And it was amazing. I mean, I appreciate the practice.
Oh, well choreographed.
And the choreography and all the rehearsal that goes into something like that. I was not tuned in to watch A Christmas Story, so I was kind of upset about that. But I guess seeing it after the fact, it was still very moving to see them perform a number from the movie in this theatrical way.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, I mean, the, you know, well choreographed 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about it. I mean, one thing I do enjoy is going to the theater. Hugh Jackman has a deep background into theater, not to mention all the movies he does and everything. And which brings me a little bit to, I know we keep talking about typecasts and things week in, week out, but I mean, the only thing is, whenever I see him, I can't help but think of Wolverine.
You get stuck at Wolverine.
Yeah, I get stuck at Wolverine, but no, I mean, he's, you know, a great actor. I mean, you got to admit that. I don't know if I'm going to see this one in the theater. My guess is probably not. I know I was talking with my mom the other day, and she's super excited to go see it in the theater because
oh, that's cool.
They winter in Florida, and they went to the Ringling Brothers Museum down there, and she was so excited about the museum that this movie came out or is coming. Well, I guess it's just released a few days ago at this point, or about a week ago. And she was really excited to go see it, you know? So I'm like, oh, great. Maybe I'll go see it. But I don't know if I'll see this one in the theater. But I would say overall, this, you know, 2.5 minute commercial, live, theatrical, it was more of a theater type piece. I mean, it was incredible.
I mean, they had to choreograph all the extras, tons of extras, singing, dancing, the cameras that were used throughout. And then all the way down to the very last frame, I expected there to be a little bit of, you know, just a superimposed graphic of with a date call out to the movie. But instead, they pull up a piece of glass with The Greatest Showman and December 20th written on it. And it just comes up from the bottom, like,
right,
practical glass to be a practical superimposed graphic.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And, you know, the other thing that I loved about it, too, was, you know, seeing the back lot of Warner Brothers Studios. Yeah, I mean, it was really cool. I mean, and you know, I've had the opportunity to be on that lot a few times. My cousin works at Warner Brothers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but that was fun to see. And it was nice to see that they didn't worry about what was in the background. So you kind of see the modern buildings, you see the water tower, you see all these other things that if it were a movie set, it would have been cinematically so much more gritty.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have added grain to the image and so on, but it was so clean and almost like, what do they say when you have too high of a frame rate and stuff? It's like a Mexican soap opera, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like that, but it was really cool. I thought it was well done.
Yeah. And it caught the excitement of everybody that was involved at the end. You could hear people, you know, yelling and screaming. And I think somebody even says, like, we did it, you know? So it's like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It was quite the circus.
They were definitely, you know, holding their breath to try to pull it off. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I'll put you on the spot here. Do you have a 3-word review for The Greatest Showman live commercial?
So the live commercial. Oh, here it is. Here it is. It's a pun. Huge act, man.
Nah, I like that. That's bad. That's bad.
That's a very bad pun. All right. We won't stick with that one.
Yeah, but we'll go with it. Huge act, man.
You want to stick with it? It's fine.
Okay. No, it's bad, but I get it. I get it. That's pretty good.
You put me on the spot. I didn't have one, so we went to the well.
I kind of had a feeling you didn't, so that's why I went there. All right. Anything, you know, anything further? I think I pretty much exhausted that one. I mean, it's just a live commercial that, well, yeah, I guess a theater piece for a commercial. Anything else about it?
Overall, I like the other pieces that are out for this. For the trailers, since I'll just give the overall marketing feel. I feel like it's got a great marketing push. Seeing a lot of out of home, and I'll answer your question before you ask. Out of home just speaks to all of the print advertising that's in and around your surroundings when you're outside of the house. So there's billboards, bus enclosures, bus wraps, all of that. Gotcha. Is just called out of home. So I guess there's kind of three big sectors where people are trying to hit you up with movie marketing, and it's TV spots where it's in your home. And those are the shorter ones. Trailers, which traditionally are in the theater in front of other movies. And then out of home is the third place that tries to hit you up when you're out and about.
Right.
The out of home spots for this, the posters for this, are really cool, I think. I like the way that they kind of capture the motion of the circus in the stills. Yeah.
Well, it looks like it's just fun. Like, you're going to go and have a good time.
Yeah, and it shows, like, Zendaya on a trapeze, and she's flying through the air, and it's kind of blurry because it's got that motion blur on it. So, as a photography guy, you know how that is, right?
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Like I said, it just looks like an overall fun night at the movies. Like, you're not going to be disappointed, and you're going to come home happy instead of one of those kind of just end-of-the-world movies or something.
I will be interested to see how young this can play. I did talk to my wife about possibly taking the kids. It felt like maybe it can go into their space, but it is definitely one that we have to watch first and then see if the kids are old enough for it.
So you're thinking it may not be a four quadrant movie.
I mean, I think they haven't sold it in the marketing as such.
Right.
But I think it could reach there.
And I think overall it's a nostalgic film because as a kid, I went to the circus, you know, at the old Chicago Stadium, and it was Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. And nowadays, I don't think they're the circus who travels anymore. I think that particular circus is retired.
Yeah, I think the animal-focused circuses are all gone now. I think it's all Cirque du Soleil and acrobatics and strictly acrobatics and waterworks. And
overall, I would say that's a good thing. I mean, we don't need to be, you know, like whatever the guy, the lion tamer with the chair and the whip.
You know? Right. Or tasering elephants or whatever, you know, don't need that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, overall, yeah, I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, again, there's the showmanship of the era that it was in.
Yeah.
And in the way it is, I mean, yeah, something has been lost.
Definitely. The cost was too high, you know, like
totally.
I used to work for a manager who used to be a clown. And he ran away with the circus, and he was with the circus, I think, for 8-10 years. And he loved hanging out with the elephants. And he would just spend the downtime between clowning around with the elephants. And he over the course of those years, he felt their pain and he saw it in their eyes. And he knew that this was not where they wanted to be. And, you know, when I met him, obviously it was much later in life and he had long left that. But it was one of his big causes that he would championed was helping free the elephants and elephant sanctuaries and all of that. So it's an amazing thing that how easily elephants can kind of connect with humans and just show their pain. So it's sad, but it was good to say that we've moved on from that.
Yeah, and I mean, elephants, tigers, lions, all the big cats they had. I mean, probably chimpanzees. I mean, all kinds of animals that were captive for human entertainment. But yeah, I mean, I think things like you said, Cirque du Soleil, I've seen a number of those over the years. I think that's kind of the newer or maybe another way is the modern circus, looking at human feats
of acrobatics and, you know, and it's all by choice and with skill and with training. And
yeah, right. I mean, how many people go to a Cirque du Soleil show who can't touch their toes and these people are bending backwards, touching their heels? I mean, it's like, it's incredible.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You know,
and we look at that in awe. So any final thoughts for The Greatest Showman or
The Greatest Showman? No, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think I got it too. I don't have really much else to say about it. And then I know last week you started your new segment of some news and updates and things. Any of that stuff going on?
So, yeah. So the segment, I was workshopping the name a little bit on the segment, and we're going to call it Updates and Hot Takes.
Updates and Hot Takes.
So here's my hot take for this week. I just saw for the first time today the trailer for Chappaquiddick.
Chappaquiddick. Oh, wait, you're talking about the one from Ted Kennedy?
My name is Ted, and my full name is Edward. And for my whole life, because people don't know that Ted is short for Edward.
I don't think I learned that until I met you.
I always tell people, like, Edward Kennedy, his nickname is Ted Kennedy. And
right.
People say, well, that doesn't make sense. Edward, the nickname for Edward is Ed or Eddie.
You would think Theodore would be Ted.
Or Theodore is, and that is true, that Theodore is a nickname. Ted is a nickname for Theodore as well.
Sure.
So that's also on the table and also confusing. But my rebuttal to them saying that doesn't make sense is Jack is the nickname for John, which is another Kennedy reference.
Right, right.
So if you're going to say Jack is a nickname for John, then all bets are off. We can say Peggy is short for Margaret, which it is. And we can say anything else we want to say about nicknames. So I'm Ted, but my name is Edward. So anyway, this Chappaquiddick, I love this story. I guess that's weird to say. Big fan of the story. My wife and I liked going to the vineyard, and we drove over the bridge, and we're like, this is the bridge. and we're whispering to each other. So the history of that space and the tension between, you know, something that I guess he had tried to make up for it the whole rest of his life, this mistake that he had made and he kind of got away with. So this is like the untold true story. You know, there's a lot of true stories out there in filmmaking and trailers. They love harping on it.
Right now there's especially, yeah.
Yeah. But the way that they kind of package this as the untold true story, it was neat to me that they did that. And I love Jason Clarke. I don't know if you're familiar with Jason Clarke.
Not fully.
He, Chicago Code, did you watch that short-lived TV show? No?
No, I haven't seen, no, I didn't see that one.
Oh, you should check out Chicago Code, being from Chicago.
Yeah.
he's Zero Dark Thirty. I think he plays Rob Hall in Everest, and he's in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I think he plays John Connor.
Oh, yeah. I saw three of those.
John Connor in Terminator Genesis, I guess. I'm a bigger fan of Terminator Genesis than most, but I still like it. I'm a big fan of Jason Clarke. So I'll watch anything he's in. He's in this. He's Ted Kennedy. Him and Ed Helms kind of go back and forth. The trailer is spot on. It has some great stuff to it. Maybe we'll get to it later in another pod, but I thought it was exciting. I saw it today, so I'd hit you up with a hot take on it.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward. I'm going to have to check out that trailer and see how it looks. That might be one to go see.
Okay.
Yeah, Ted, I had a good time tonight, and Mortal Engines, we'll see how that is. The Greatest Showman. Yeah, I mean, if it's anything like the live commercial, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a fun movie. I want to thank everybody for listening, and you can find everything we have at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Links to everything, social media, all the places where we host our podcast, and Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast.
And you can subscribe and share from wherever you listen to your podcast, iTunes Podcast, Google Play, or Stitcher.
All right, Ted. Well, I guess that is it for this week. You know, look forward to talking to you again next week, and we'll have some more trailers, other reviews, maybe some news and hot tips, as you call them. Yeah, I had a good time. How about you?
I'm branding it a little bit more. We're going with hashtag TJP Hot Takes.
All right, Ted.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.